session number 11114, reel 1.
Colonel Chitty, reel 1. Colonel, can you tell me how you came to join the 1st 4th Essex?
Well, at the beginning of the war, as I say, I was in bed with a poisoned leg. My father was still in India, and my mother was at home. And my father had views that it wasn't the duty of people at Cambridge who were learning for a career to go off to fight, which was the army's job. But that point of view was very soon overcome by people in England who knew what really had to be done. In my case, compromise was reached by allowing me to join the local territorials, which the colonel at the time was Colonel Meggy, and was a fairly close friend of my uncle's. So I was put up for a commission, because I'd been through the corps, and also at Cambridge, and I'd taken some minor exam, a sort of Certificate A, I think they called it, so I was in due course given a commission as a second lieutenant in the 4th Essex. The Essex at that time, we were a brigade, 4, 5, 6 and 7. And Kitchener was busy with his new army. He wasn't very keen on territorials, so he kept them very embodied, of course you couldn't do anything about that, but he kept them more or less on the East Coast defences. The effect of that was that we were, the 4th Battalion was up in Norwich that time. And then it was very soon realised that territorials would have to do more than just sit on the coast, and the whole brigade battalion by battalion split into what was known as Foreign Service and Home Service. Well, I quietly said nothing about it. It just remained automatically with the Foreign Service side. And from there, we did all our training. We started, as I say, up in the place. We had rather odd billets, because up in Norwich, we were in the workhouse. And we were there for some time. And my particular job was a signalling. I took up signalling officers, and so I learned pretty quickly Morse and flags, and to some extent telephones we first know about, but we didn't have any equipment to speak of.
Did you train with the heliograph?
Later, not at the time, not here. Well, heliograph practically useless in England. Later, I did a lot of that in Egypt, where you could use it. Then we went down to Colchester for a bit, and there we were in the lunatic asylum, which was empty of loonies. It was quite a good place for barracks. It was quite convenient and comfortable. Then we did a lot of maneuvering around there. Equipment was very hard to come by. and I mean the ordinary battalion simply had the Siemens small telephones, which worked with a solid insulated wire and earth returns. And I found some down at on the coast where one of our companies was, a couple of old telephone things which you did this, which never seemed to be abandoned.
You cranked the handle for those ones.
So we took that, and I was able to do quite a lot of telephone things with these things, which at the moment the army hadn't provided. Well then,
why? Can I ask you why you decided to be a signaller? What attracted you to being a signals officer?
I think they suggested it, and I've always fairly keen on that sort of. Of the telephones and things like that side of it. And they had the signal section, of course, mainly flags at the time, and they wanted they had the other signal officer, and they offered it to me, which I took on. And that more or less followed my career for a long time. I stuck with signals, which suited me. And was keen on them.
What sort of people did you have in the 4th Battalion of the Essex?
Well, it was rather difficult to describe, but we still had, of course, the distinction between, to a certain extent, between the officer class and the NCO, and my signal thing had a very good sergeant, and a good corporal, I think his name was Newman, I forget, and they were all pretty intelligent. They came from all walks of life, just been picked up. I don't think I can pinpoint any particular one.
Were most of them long-term pre-war members of the battalion?
Probably most of them were, and the rest I suppose we picked up as we went along. But
so they were enthusiastic soldiers.
Yes, they were quite keen. At that time it was a signal and another thing, the signal department. Of course, you had bicycles, and that. Saved me a lot of walking. I haven't been too keen on, but apart from that, we did our route marches. In those days, the signalers walked at the head of the battalion, but you're pushing your bikes, and we had marching in full kit with the rifle, weighed about 50 to 60 pounds, with your pack and everything.
An athletic exercise.
And it was a good exercise. And towards shortly, really, until I got busy and a bit training, route marches would do 30 miles a day. And that was all around the country. And I think we had sort of military exercises with the similar corresponding bodies of the other three battalions. We didn't see very much of them, except in the field.
Did you practice a lot of trench work while you were at Colchester?
No, they didn't do any of that, to speak of.
It was mainly field exercises?
In the field, yes.
So it would be attacking in open
line? Yes, and or hiding behind hedges. That's all. There was no digging to speak of. I think we had got them, small entrenching tools, but we didn't use them very much, not on those exercises.
Do you recall ever practicing attacks on fortified positions?
No, not particularly, no. There weren't any, you see. They'd have to be imagined. Yeah, I can't. It's not very clear in my mind because, as I say, the signalling section didn't really do what the companies did. We didn't go in much for that thing.
And you were presumably in headquarters.
Yes, it was part of the headquarters, with the CO, the second in command, and the adjutant, and the signalling officer was part of them. That was a mess, which lasted all through our period.
You were saying that you were short of equipment, and you picked up some telephones that you found. Was the battalion in general short of basic equipment?
No, I don't think so. I think it would be the more modern ones. I mean, the type of telephone which the regular army was the D3, I think, in those days. And we didn't get those for the territories, the Siemens, which was a small, not quite such a good machine. Was considered enough, and remained like that until really after we'd got back to Egypt.
Did they have enough rifles, for example? And
yes, I don't think we were in trouble with rifles. I know we did a certain amount of rifle practice with places, because nearly all the places where you are, there were rifle ranges. And various units would go out probably perhaps 10 or 15 rounds you'd let off, but you didn't have unlimited ammunition at that time.
Did the battalion have machine guns when you joined it?
No, we didn't in the battalion. The machine gun section, I think, was belonged to the brigade. So later on, when the serious fighting, of course, they came up as wanted into the line with you, or in some cases, in front of the line. And then we moved on to St Albans during the winter. It was a matter of interest that the officers' mess was in a home for bad little women.
So you'd been a workhouse, a lunatic asylum, and a home for fallen women.
And a home for bad little women. That was the end, and until the time came when, in the next year, and we were hauled off, and they wanted the attack on Suvla. We were earmarked for that, the whole East Anglian division, the territorial division. The other brigades were people like Norfolk and Suffolk and Beds and Hearts, which we really never saw very much of.
When did you first hear that you were going overseas?
Oh, not a very short time before we left.
Did you know where you were going, approximately?
I don't think, until we got on board. And then we were going for the Mediterranean, you see. Obviously, our troopers in those days, they took about... We were a battalion, we filled one ship, and luckily we got through without seeing any submarines. And through the Mediterranean, fetched up at the end of July, early August, in Budros Harbour. Well, there we waited while the arrangements for the Suvla attack were being done, and I got... flu or something, some not very important thing, but it put me to bed for about a week, and I was actually kept in Budros when the battalion itself were mainly landing at Suvla. I missed the actual landing, which was just as well, I think, because we lost quite a number of men and officers, even at that, although it wasn't heavily opposed. It was mostly long-distance fire, that.
Artillery.
Oh, yes, from the Turks coming over the peninsula. And as I got, about a week after I got better, then went back and joined the battalion.
How did you actually get to them from Mudros?
Boat. Trooper from, we went straight out and into Mudros Harbour, where they just waited to be sort of the other troops collected for the Suvla landing. I had a weak spell on a well-known ship, the Aragon, which, if you remember, was afloat on, or rather grounded on beer bottles and champagne bottles, according to the story at the time.
And then, how did you go ashore? Did you have to get into?
Then you got into small boats.
And you were rowed ashore.
Yeah, rowed ashore, and we waded about the last few yards. But when we went, it was quite calm and everything. And there were a few shells dropping over, and you just have to take a chance on that. There were no trenches or anything to be in. But then we were kept there. The original intention, as you know, the Suvla landing was to go across and catch the Turks in the rear on Gallipoli itself. And we set off over the sort of marshy grounds or flat grounds by Suvla. And we had, I think, an Australian or a couple of Australians were detailed to act as guides. And they were worse than useless. Result of, we went off into the middle of nowhere, didn't know where we were, and they disappeared. So we just sort of packed up where we were and waited for further orders.
Were you with a draft going forward at Suvla?
Well, I was with my signallers. See, with the headquarters taking took our telephone and these beastly bits of wire which you use to rail out and you could never pick up again. We soon came to a stop and we're back there. I can't remember in detail what sort of must have found some trenches, I think, by that time, until and about a month later they realized that the thing was a complete flop and reached the stalemate. And then our battalion, for some reason, was moved off to our right to join up with the left-hand flank of the Australians and New Zealanders. And we were next door then. We went up to some trenches next door to the New Zealand brigade and were on a place called Hill 60, which were nice. We had trenches made there, which we dug down in, and that became a home for quite a long time.
And what could you see forward of your positions on Hill 60?
We could just see where we were with the CO and adjutant, who incidentally were quite new. The original CO and adjutant disappeared very quickly after the original landing with wounds or sickness and everything. And we had a new, a very good CO called called Jimson, who was really a South African warrior, and our new adjutant is Graham. And where we sort of a bit of rock going up like that, about head high, you know, with which were opened out this way, and there we had a tarpaulin slung from the rock onto boats, a green tarpaulin, I suppose about very big, about 8 by 8, that, and that was where the four of us stayed for quite a long time.
So you weren't dug in?
No, well, the rest of the battalion, we were, in that sense, we were in a bit of a sort of half trench.
You were really behind, you were protected behind, by the rock?
Behind the rock, at various parts. It became a long trench along that, behind it. The trouble, the Turks were about a couple of hundred yards ahead of us, looking straight ahead, and we could go across, but you had to be careful in getting out of our trench to go across the no man's land, which they used to patrol at night a certain amount, because there were two places where you could get out of your trench fairly easily, and Turks had machine guns aligned on them.
And fixed lines.
I think we lost about half our officers going in, cryptic, as they were over the top. Blind shooting at light.
On fixed lines?
Hmm?
On fixed lines.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of wire in front of the entrenchments?
I don't think we had much of that. There was a cave which had a hole looking out, through which you could, there was a hole about that size, you could just see a bit of the Turkish lines, and you could lie there with a rifle for a bit and occasionally see movement, Turkish lines, and let off. But the question of chance was really quite extraordinary in a way, because one day earlier on, before we were in trenches, I was sitting doing my daily duty on the ground, which was in the open, and I saw something like a stone come rattling along about 2 or 3 yards away. And when I got up, looked at it, it was a spent bullet. Well, that bullet was straight in line for me, but it just stopped short. Now, a bit later, where we were in the trench just behind our dugout, there were ourselves, a sergeant major, and a couple of other people were talking one morning, I forget what it was, and the company sergeant was standing actually next to me, more or less touching. He suddenly put his hand up and fell down, and a bullet enfilading us had taken him straight through the head.
It's purely a matter of luck.
Might have been a foot away, and it might have been me. And those are things you hardly notice at the time, but you had to tell. Thank God it was a lot. And there we stayed, really, until the end of the evacuation came.
How could you get forward from your dugout and trench to the front line trenches? Did you have a communication?
We were the front line.
You were in the front line?
Yes, we were because the next lot of trenches were the Turks.
So you were in the middle, were you in the middle of the battalion?
Yes, I suppose more. Yes, you would be more. In the sense,
were the trenches a continuous line? Was it a single?
Yes, after some time, I think we extended them because we joined up on the one side with the New Zealanders, but you didn't normally mix with them, and on the other side. It just ended, I think, nothing very much, but there was a point out of our left of our line where there was a gully in front, like that rather. Then halfway down the gully was one of the 13 pounders. They'd brought the blooming thing up in bits. And put that, and that was, he was able to, well, to worry the Turks, I think, by shooting and blading them to some extent.
Were the Turks very active in sniping? And
not our end, no. I don't think we ever had any deliberate attack, so to speak. It was just a matter of shooting each other when you could see anything to shoot at.
You said they were active patrolling at night. Did the battalion send out a lot of patrols at night as well?
Did what?
Did the battalion send out a lot of patrols at night?
Yes, we used to send them out. That's where a lot of our officers were killed. So you see, in the 4 months that I was there, only two of the officers who without the beginning, came off at the end, which I was one, actually not having been fighting so much. And one of the other company officers, a chap called Dollar, he and I were the only survivors of the original battalion that we went on. We used to get reinforcements from time to time, keep our numbers up a bit. And from a slightly lighter side, one of the difficulties there was water, and it all came up. We must have been a mile or more away from the beach. It used to come up in these water wagons, which I know things about that size. Held quite, and they'd send this up because it all had to come over from Alexandria. And our doctor at that time, not the original one, he was one who joined us, and he was a very good doctor, but he'd been out in China and he had a horror of opium. And that was. If you wanted any of the normal pills that were issued, if your bowels were much too free, he wouldn't give them at all. And he also thought he was a great expert on chlorinating the water, because the water came over. It had to be chlorinated before it was safe to be drunk. And he used to drink his water up with us and the four of us in the mess. He'd have his water and say, well, you see, I do know something about this chlorinating water. You can't taste it at all, and I assure you it's absolutely safe. Whereas I omitted to tell him that we had taken the water out of the cans before he chlorinated it, and we were drinking pure water.
Did you suffer at all?
Nobody suffered at all. No, I think we did better from it. I don't think he ever knew that one.
What was the general state of health in the battalion in Gallipoli?
Well, as I say, we lost all but two officers. And the casualties were 50-50 bullets and dysentery. and about the same with the men. I mean, that was that's what happened there. I know. Well, I suppose this came from the you can't have really sanitary arrangements in